Tonight we present Sir Cedric Hardwicke as Sherlock Holmes and Finlay Currie as Dr. Watson in The Adventure of the Speckled Band by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, adapted for broadcasting by John Dixon Carr and produced by Martin C. Webster. It seems only fitting on this occasion that the greatest of fictional detectives in his best-known adventure should be introduced to us by Mr. Adrian Conan Doyle, Sir Arthur's son, who is with us tonight in the studio. Mr. Adrian Conan Doyle.
Who was Sherlock Holmes? Since the death of my father, this question has often been renewed, and in this connection I regret to add that on one or two occasions some gratuitous nonsense has been written on the subject by persons possessing no factual knowledge whatever. Were Holmes's remarkable characteristics based on Dr. Joseph Bell of Edinburgh University, or merely rooted in the influence of Edgar Allan Poe? I am in a position to answer the question very simply. Sherlock Holmes was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. A man, he once wrote, cannot spin a character out of his own inner consciousness and make it really lifelike unless he has the possibilities of that character within himself. But more than the possibilities were here. Many cases that had baffled the police were brought to him, and I can recall no single instance in which my father failed to solve the problem. He proved the innocence of a man convicted of murder. Holmes himself had no more difficult test. The very accoutrements of Sherlock Holmes, the curved pipe, the dust-red dressing gown, were the accoutrements of Conan Doyle, and the family still preserved the originals. When a difficult case demanded the utmost from his powers of dissection and deduction, he would, like Holmes, retire into his curtained and silent study for 2 or 3 days on end. My father enjoyed many experiences in common with the great detective, including, to my knowledge, 2 threats against his life, one from an outwardly respectable person in the best Sherlock tradition, and the other from a man whom he had landed behind bars. As for those powers, I have never known his equal. In traveling through the capital cities of the world, it was one of my keenest enjoyments to accompany him to some principal restaurant and there listen to his quiet speculations as to the characters, professions, and other idiosyncrasies, all quite hidden from my eyes, of our fellow diners. In many cases, the person in question would be known to the maitre d'hotel, and the accuracy of the deductions proved to be absolutely startling. Dr. Joseph Bell, his old mentor, did indeed help to develop those powers. But the powers were innate, or no teacher could have stimulated them. For the mental prototype of Sherlock Holmes, we need search no further than his creator. I think it only fair to say this before we travel in fancy to number 221B Baker Street and listen to another character, equally famous, equally beloved, John H. Watson, M.D., as he tells us, The Adventure of the Speckled Band.
In glancing over my notes of the 70-odd cases in which for the past 8 years I have studied the methods of my friend Sherlock Holmes, I find many tragic, some comic, a large number merely strange, but non-commonplace. But of all these varied cases, I can recall none which presented more singular features than that associated with a well-known Surrey family, the Roylotts of Stoke Moran. It was early in April in the year 83 when Holmes and I were still sharing bachelor lodgings in Baker Street. I awoke one morning to find Sherlock Holmes standing fully dressed at the side of my bed.
Watson. Watson.
Huh? Holmes. What on earth?
Very sorry to disturb you, Watson, but it's the common lot this morning. Mrs. Hudson's been disturbed. She retorted upon me and I on you.
What is it then, a fire?
No, Watson. A client. It seems that a young lady has arrived in a considerable state of excitement and insists on seeing me.
Now? At, what is it, 7 o'clock in the morning?
Exactly, Watson. And when young ladies wander about the metropolis at this hour and knock sleepy people out of their beds, I presume it's something pressing. If this should prove an interesting case, Watson, and you should care to follow it from the outset...
Oh, my dear fellow, I wouldn't miss it for anything.
Excellent, Watson. Then shall we say, the sitting room in 10 minutes.
Nor shall I forget my first sight of the young lady, dressed in black and heavily veiled, who waited in the bow window of our sitting room. A fire had already been kindled there, its light touching the table of chemicals and the old worn sofa with a violin case in one corner. Yet the firelight could not penetrate that black veil, that opaque veil turned towards us as...
Oh, it was good of you to see me, Mr. Holmes. You are Sherlock Holmes.
That is my name, madam. This is my intimate friend and associate, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
Ah, and I see that Mrs. Hudson's had the good sense to light the fire. Pray draw up a chair to it. Allow me.
Thank you.
You sit there, Watson, and I will make myself comfortable on the sofa. You're shivering.
Am I? Yes, I dare say.
Mrs. Hudson!
Yes, Mr. Holmes?
Will you bring some hot coffee for our guest, please?
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, thank you, but it's not cold that makes me shiver.
Indeed. What then?
It's fear, Mr. Holmes. It's terror.
Mrs. Hudson.
Yes, sir?
That will be all, thank you. Bring the coffee presently. That will be all.
Very good, sir.
You doubt what I say, Mr. Holmes. Let me raise my veil. I saw your eyes change. I'm barely 30, and yet you see the grey in my hair.
Try not to be afraid. We shall do our best to set matters right. You come in by train this morning, I see.
Do you know me, then?
No, but I observe the second half of a return ticket in the palm of your left glove. Quite a long distance, too. You've had a good drive in a dog cart along heavy roads before you even reached the station.
But how could...
Oh, there's no mystery, my dear madam. The left arm of your jacket is spattered with mud in no less than 7 places. Only a dog cart throws up mud in that way. Yes. Forgive me.
Whatever your reasons may be, you're perfectly correct. I took the first train to Waterloo this morning because I can't stand this strain any longer. I shall go mad if it continues.
Strain, you say? Hmm?
My name is Helen Stoner. I make my home with my stepfather. He's the last survivor of one of the oldest Saxon families in England, the Roylets of Stoke Moran.
Stoke Moran, yes.
On the western border of Surrey. The name is familiar to you?
Perfectly.
My stepfather's family was at one time among the richest in England. Now, genteel poverty. A few acres of bramble-covered land and an old stone house in the park. That was why, years ago, my stepfather took a medical degree and went out to Calcutta. He established a large practice there. Heaven knows he had force of character.
But what?
That he beat his native servant to death, and they put him in prison.
I see, Miss Stoner.
While Dr. Roylott was in India, he married my mother, Mrs. Stoner, widow of...
Not Major General Stoner, Bengal artillery.
Yes, Dr. Watson. Did you...
Watson himself served in India, Miss Stoner.
I see.
Pray go on with your statement.
My sister Julia and I were twins. We were very young when my mother remarried. She brought Dr. Roylott a large sum of money and gave it to him entirely with only the provision that Julia and I should have an annual sum if we married. Married? No matter. After my stepfather's release from prison, we returned to England. My mother died. And then...
Don't clench your hands, Miss Stoner. You want to tell me that Dr. Roylott's fits of violence have increased, hmm?
Yes.
Dangerously so?
He's quarreled with everyone in the neighborhood of Stoke Moran. He's brawled and fought and laid about him with a hunting crop until...
Thank you, I'd already guessed it.
You guessed?
The frill of lace at your wrist, Miss Stoner.
Oh, please don't turn it back.
The blue marks of 4 fingers and a thumb. Oh, look here, Holmes, I say.
Dr. Roylott probably doesn't realize.
Evidently not.
He's immense in size and immense in strength. See him striding along, yellow-eyed, in top hat and frock coat and high gaiters, with one of his animal pets
this
following him.
This estimable gentleman keeps pets, hmm?
He has a passion for Indian animals. Present he's got a cheetah and a baboon roaming loose in the grounds.
Did you say cheetah? An Indian leopard?
Yes. Some friend of his sends them from India. I say friend. I don't suppose Dr. Roylott has any friends, except the wandering gypsies. He gives the gypsies leave to camp on our estate, and he sits with them in their tents. Sometimes he wanders away with them for weeks on end. He's the terror of the village, and... You can imagine, Mr. Holmes, that my sister and I had no great pleasure in our lives.
I can well imagine it.
No servant would stay with us. We did all the work of the house. Poor Julia was only 28 when she died.
Your sister's dead, then?
Yes. She died on the eve of her marriage.
On the eve of... I see.
Julie and I met so few people, Mr. Holmes. But at our aunt's, my mother's maiden sister near Harrow, Julia met this young man and fell in love with him. And
your stepfather? What did he say?
Oh, Dr. Roylott offered no objection.
Indeed. Very suggestive. And then?
Julia died.
Can you remember the details?
I wish I could forget them. I told you I think that the manor house is very old. Only one wing is now inhabited, and the bedrooms in this wing are on the ground floor. I want you to imagine three bedrooms in a line. The first Dr. Roylott's, the second Julia's, and the third mine. There's no communication between them, but they all open out into the same corridor. Do I make myself clear?
Perfectly, Miss Stone.
The windows of all three rooms open out on the lawn opposite. On that night, the night it happened...
Go on.
On that night, a wild night of wind and rain, Dr. Roylott had gone to his room early. I remember the whitewashed corridor with the flickering lamp. I remember going into my own room and locking the door. We always did that with a cheetah loose in the grounds. And dropping the bar of the shutters across the windows. Then, just as I was preparing for bed...
Helen?
Yes, Julia?
May I come in, please?
Of course, dear. Just a moment while I unlock the door.
You needn't lock it again, Helen. I can only stay for a moment.
Julia, is anything wrong?
No. No, truly. Only, I wanted to speak to you, and he's still awake.
How do you know?
Those Indian cigars of his. I can smell the cigar smoke in my room. Helen?
Yes, Julia?
I don't want to leave you, Helen.
Oh.
But I do love the man I'm engaged to, and... Oh, Helen, anything to get away from him.
You mustn't think of it like that, Julia.
No. No, I don't, really. You'll marry too, Helen.
Perhaps. Does it matter?
Oh, how the lamp flares in that draught. The cheetah's with him tonight, Helen. I heard it snarl. Have you barred the shutters?
Yes, dear.
Oh, I can imagine him in that room, pacing up and down past the iron safe with a big black shadow of him following the lamp. Helen?
Yes, dear?
Have you ever heard anyone whistle in the dead of night?
Heard anyone?
No, don't stare. I mean it. A low, clear whistle. Have you heard it?
No, certainly not.
I have. Always in the dark. Always about 3 o'clock in the morning. I can't tell where it comes from. Perhaps from the next room, perhaps from the lawn. I thought I'd just ask you whether you'd heard it.
Oh, Julia, it must be those wretched gypsies in the plantation.
Very likely. Yep. Anyway, it's of no great consequence. I'm happy, Helen. Mm. I must remember that I'm happy. Good night, dear. Sleep well.
Sleep well. That was what you said. But I couldn't sleep. Julia and I were twins, Mr. Holmes. Perhaps her emotions were my emotions. The wind howling, the rain beating and splashing against the windows. Towards 3 o'clock, under the hubbub of the gale, I suddenly sat up in bed to hear... Julia! Oh, was that you who screamed? Julia! Oh, I must get up. I must go to her. Where's the door? It's too dark to find the door. Matches. I can't even find any matches. Oh, mustn't be frightened. It was probably only a nightmare. Oh, door. It's all right. Lamp will be lighted in the corridor. Yes. Julia! The whistle! The whistle she heard! I didn't imagine it! Was that a window bar falling? What was it? I'm coming, Julia! Don't be afraid! It's Helen, Julia! Open the door! I heard the whistle. I heard something like metal falling. And then... Julia! Oh, thank God you're safe. Give me your hand. That's a good girl. Julia, what's wrong? Why do you grope as though you were blind? Can't you speak?
Helen,
it was... Speak out, Julia. What are you saying?
It was the bat, Helen. Speckled bat.
Don't write, Julia. I'm not strong enough to hold you up.
Oh, don't look at me like that. I'm speckled red. Julia!
That's all, Mr. Holmes. She died presently in convulsions. Dr. Roylott came out of his room, all huge and yellow-faced, I can see him yet, and gave her brandy and tried to revive her, but it was no use. That was the end of the sister I loved. Are you listening to me, Mr. Holmes?
Mm. Oh, I beg your pardon.
Sitting back with your eyes closed and your fingertips together, I...
Believe me, Miss Turner, I was never more intent. Now tell me, this whistle and the metallic sound you heard, could you swear to it?
That was what the coroner asked me. Yes, I could swear to it.
Was your sister dressed?
No, she was in her nightdress. In one hand she had a box of matches and in the other a charred stump of a match.
Showing she had struck a light and looked about her. Yes, yes, that's important. And what conclusions did the coroner come to?
The doctors found no cause of death.
No cause of death, Miss Stoner?
None whatever, Dr. Watson, and that's not all. My sister was alone, quite alone when this happened.
The room was locked up on the inside.
Door locked and windows barred. The walls and floor were solid.
You're quite sure of that?
Absolutely sure.
You spoke of gypsies, Miss Stoner. Were there gypsies in the plantation at the time?
Yes, there are nearly always some there.
And what did you gather from this allusion to a band? A speckled band.
But surely, Holmes, excuse me, surely that's obvious. The band must refer to gypsies and the spotted handkerchiefs they wear over their heads. Surely that must have suggested the word.
These are deep waters, Watson. We must not theorize without data. Have you anything else to tell me, Miss Turner?
Yes. I'm engaged to be married now to a very old, very dear friend, and...
And?
And I heard the whistle again last night.
Where did you hear it?
2 days ago, some repairs were started to the west wing of the building. My room's uninhabitable, so I moved into my sister's old room and I slept in her bed. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, in the silence and darkness of that room, I couldn't endure it, Mr. Holmes. I ran away in terror. What is it, Mr. Holmes? What do you think of it all?
I think, Miss Stoner, that we haven't a moment to lose. If we were to come to Stoke Moran today, could we see these rooms without Dr. Roylott's knowledge?
Yes, he spoke of coming to town today on important business. He'll be away all day.
Excellent, excellent. You'll come along, Watson. Hmm?
By all means, my dear fellow.
Then you may expect us both. In the meantime...
I must go, Mr. Holmes. I daren't stay any longer. But I shall be at Stoke Moran to meet you. Oh, no, don't get up. You needn't see me to the door. I may have sounded foolish, sir. I may have sounded incoherent, but I am grateful to you both. I am deeply grateful.
Watson.
Yes, Holmes?
Will you be good enough to hand me down the cherry wood pipe from the corner of the mantelpiece?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, what do you make of it, Watson?
I don't know what to make of it. It's a dark and sinister business altogether.
Dark enough, yes. Sinister enough, undoubtedly. Data, Watson. I must have data. When you combine the idea of the whistle, the band of gypsies, the doctor's financial interest in preventing this girl's marriage... Oh, now come, Watson, surely you notice that. And finally, metallic clang that might have been caused by a falling window bar.
You think that's the line of solution?
May well be, Watson, and yet... And yet... What in the devil's name is that?
Mr. Holmes, sir. Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Mrs. Hudson, what is it?
There's a gentleman here, sir, so big his top hat brushes the crossbar of the front door, carrying an tin crop, overturning my coffee tray, and saying that...
Which of you two is Holmes?
That is my name, sir. But you have the advantage of me.
I am Dr. Grantley Roylott of Stoke Moran.
Indeed, Doctor. Well, pray take a seat.
I will do nothing of the kind. My stepdaughter has been here. I've traced her. What's she been saying to you?
It's a little cold for the time of the year.
What has she been saying to you?
But I've heard that the crocuses promise well.
I carry a hunting crop, you notice. Take care I don't use it on someone. As, for instance, I use it on this sofa cushion. You are Holmes, the meddler. Holmes, the busybody. Holmes, the Scotland Yard. Jackie
office! Your conversation is most entertaining. Please close the door when you go out. There is a decided draught.
Can I prove to you, Mr. Holmes, that I am the wrong man to meddle with? Yes, I think I can. Let me demonstrate with the poker from your hearth. I pick it up, like this. I grasp it at each end. I bend, and bend, and bend, until it twists into a curve. There's your poker back again. See that you keep out of my grip. Good day.
Well, he seems an amiable sort of person, doesn't he?
Fancy's having the insolence to confuse me with the official detective force. You know, Watson, I rather wish he'd stayed longer.
Stayed longer? Dr. Roylott? Why?
I might have shown him perhaps my own grip is not much more feeble than his.
But, Holmes, what are you doing?
Merely straightening out the poker again. Like this. Put it back behind the fire, Aunt Watson. I think we may now order breakfast.
And then, that afternoon, the drive in a trap through deep Surrey lanes. The grey gables of the house, lichen-blotched and half-ruined. Long windows from the lawn leading into the little oak-paneled bedroom, chest of drawers, small wickerwork chairs, narrow white counterpaned bed where Julia Stoner had died. As the shadows gathered, I remember Helen standing there, white-faced, while Holmes paced up and down, a magnifying lens in his hand.
No, no, Watson. No, won't do.
What won't do, my dear fellow?
That first theory of mine. No. You see these window shutters?
Well?
Mr. Holmes, you must make haste. Dr. Roylott may be back from London at any moment.
No one could have entered or left by these windows once the bars were up. We must discard any notion that the metallic noise was caused by a shutter bar. The door. Look at it. It was locked on the inside.
I told you, Mr. Holmes, my sister was alone.
And yet she died horribly. Yes. Miss Stoner?
Yes?
That bell rope hanging beside the bed. Where does the bell communicate with?
I think with the housekeeper's room.
So? It looks newer than the other thing.
Well, it was only put there a couple of years ago.
Your sister asked for it, I suppose.
No, Julia never even used it. I told you we couldn't keep our servants.
Indeed. Very interesting. One moment while I examine it. Hello? This bell rope's a dummy.
You mean it won't ring?
Admirably put, Watson. It's not even attached to a wire. When I stand back where you are, I can see the hook on the wall where it's attached, just above the little opening of the ventilator. Ventilator.
I say, Holmes.
Yes. Yes, yes.
What a fool a builder must be to open a ventilator into another room. Dr. Roylott's room, isn't it? Well, you could just as easily have made it an outside wall.
Oh, that's modern too, Mr. Holmes.
Done about the same time as the bell rope, I imagine.
Yes.
I must see your stepfather's room, Miss Stoner. I must see it at once.
Well, that's easy, Mr. Holmes. If you follow me out of the windows here and turn to the right, that's it. Well, those are the windows of his room. But please don't ask me to go in.
Why not?
I tell you, Dr. Roylott may be back at any moment.
We must risk it, dear lady. Will you precede me?
If you insist.
Come, Watson. We'll give you a chance in the art of detection. What do you see in this room?
Well, a camp bed, an armchair, a wooden chair, and an iron safe.
A safe, yes. What's in the safe, Miss Stoner?
Oh, only Dr. Roylott's business papers, so far as I know.
There isn't a cat in it, for instance.
A cat? No. What a strange idea.
Well, look at the top of the safe. A saucer of milk, and beside it, you notice a dog leash tied in a loop at the end. And that wooden chair against the wall. My lens. Watson, where's my lens?
In your hand, my dear fellow.
Ah, yes, so it is. Forgive me if I bend down and examine the seat of the chair. Thank you. That is quite settled.
Settled?
It's essential, Miss Stoner, that you should follow my advice in every respect. Your life may depend upon it. You understand that?
I understand.
Dr. Watson and I must spend the night in your sister's room. You could stay for one night in your old room.
Oh, yes, of course, but I...
Good. Now, when you hear Dr. Roylott retire for the night, open the shutters and put a lamp in the window of your sister's room.
Yes.
Then go to your old room and stay there. We shall be watching from another part of the ground. Then...
Mr. Holmes, listen. I think I hear a carriage in the drive.
Will you be good enough to go and see? Hurry.
If it's Dr. Roylott returning...
As she says, Holmes, if it is Dr. Roylott returning...
There was no carriage, Watson, or I should have heard it. I wanted a word with you in private. There's a distinct element of danger about this business tonight.
Oh, if it's danger, Holmes, you can count me in every time. But what have you seen? What is it?
You know my method, Watson. Look up there, at the ventilator between these two rooms.
Yes, but it's not such an unusual thing. In any case, the ventilator's too small. A rat couldn't get through there.
I knew we should find a ventilator before we even came to Stoke Moran.
My dear...
Oh, yes, I did. You recall Miss Stoner's testimony?
Well?
Her sister on that fatal night could smell the smoke of Dr. Roylott's cigar. Surely that meant some communication between the two rooms. It could only be a small one, it would have been noticed. I deduced a ventilator.
Yes, but what harm can there be in that?
A ventilator is made, a cord is hung, and a lady who sleeps in the bed dies. Did you notice anything peculiar about that bed?
No.
It was clamped to the floor. It could not be moved away from the rope. And that means...
I don't understand everything it means, Holmes, but I do seem to see dimly what you're hinting at. We're just in time, if we are in time, to prevent some subtle, horrible...
Subtle enough. Horrible enough. When a doctor goes wrong, he's the first of criminals. Not a word more, Watson. Until tonight.
Shall I ever forget our vigil in Julia Stoner's room? It was bad enough that night, creeping up through the dark grounds, a wind blowing in our faces and the yellow lamp shining ahead. Once, out of the laurel bushes, darted what seemed to be a hideous and distorted child who threw itself on the grass with writhing limbs and then ran swiftly across the lawn into the darkness. My God, did you see it?
A pretty household, Watson. Hmm? That was the pet baboon.
I had forgotten Dr. Roylott's fancies. And the cheetah?
We may find it on our shoulders at any moment.
But worse, much worse, was the vigil in that bedroom. We walked on tiptoe, we closed the shutters, we turned out the lamp. I could not hear a sound, not even the drawing of a breath, yet I knew that Holmes sat open-eyed within a few feet of me. I carried a revolver. Holmes gripped a long, thin cane. Once, outside the windows... The cheetah was indeed at liberty, but no other sound came to us through these cramped and dreary hours except the distant note of a church clock. Hours, days, weeks, then...
Holmes, didn't I tell you not to speak? There was a gleam of light up by the ventilator. It's gone now.
He's lighted a dark lantern. Can't you smell the heated metal?
Listen. Can you hear me, Watson?
Yes.
I'm going to strike a match and then lash out of the bell rope with this cane. Have your revolver at hand. Ready?
Yes.
Now! Did you see it, Watson? Did you see it?
I can't see anything. Even the match blinds me. It's... That came from the next room. What was it?
It was pain. It was fear. It was rage. It was... the end. Watson, come with me.
In the next room, where the beam of a dark lantern fell on the open safe, sat Dr. Grimesby Roylott. He sat very quietly in a grey dressing gown and red Turkish slippers. Across his lap lay the dog lash with a looped end. His chin was cocked upwards and his eyes were fixed in a rigid stare on a corner of the ceiling. Round his forehead he had a peculiar yellow band with brownish speckles which seemed to be bound tightly round his head.
The band, the speckled band.
That band moved. I swear I saw it move.
Oh, yes. See the little diamond-shaped head coil up out of Dr. Roylott's hair?
What is it?
A swamp adder. The deadliest snake in India.
Has he been...
bitten? Yes. Stay where you are. He's past medical aid.
What are you going to do?
The dog nest with the loop, Watson. That's how he carried it to and from the safe. That's how I shall carry it back to the safe.
Oh, for God's sake, take care. If that snake strikes again...
I shall take care, Watson. I throw the loop over the neck. So, I drag it away from the doctor's head, bring it back to its hiding place, and close the door of the safe, Watson. Close it. Now do you understand?
Yes. Yes, I think I do.
A snake, Watson. It occurred to me as soon as I saw the dummy bell rope and remembered Dr. Roylott's supply of creatures from India. You see the purpose of the bell rope?
Yes, it was nothing more than a bridge. Each night he put that snake through the ventilator.
With a certainty it would crawl down the rope and land on the bed. It might or might not bite the victim that night, but sooner or later it was inevitable.
And Julius Stoner died in convulsions. The coroner might have guessed.
No, perhaps, Watson. It seemed unlikely that a country coroner, even in this year of grace 1883, would have noticed the two tiny marks of the poison fangs. You remember the whistle?
It was a signal of some kind.
Dr. Roylott had trained the snake, probably by the use of the milk over there, to return to him when summoned. That metallic clang, you heard it yourself, came from closing the safe door too hastily. When I examined the doctor's chair and found that he'd been repeatedly standing on it to get at the ventilators...
Well, it's an ugly sight now, Holmes. And I think I see how that happened. When you lashed out with the cane...
It turned on him, Watson. It flew at the first person it saw. I am indirectly responsible, you understand, for the death of Dr. Grimesby Roylott. And I can't say that it's likely to weigh very heavily on my conscience.
That was The Adventure of the Speckled Band by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, adapted for broadcasting by John Dixon Carr and produced by Martin C. Webster. Sherlock Holmes was played by Sir Cedric Hardwick by permission of Robert Donat, Dr. Watson by Finlay Curry, Helen Stoner by Griselda Harvey, Julia Stoner by Thea Wells, Dr. Grimesby Roylott by Richard George, Mrs. Hudson by Dora Gregory, Animal Imitations by Brian Foley. The program was introduced by Adrian Conan Doyle.